The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Monday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good, and I thought it was a really, really, really good weekend. Let me give you a couple of examples here with audio cuts that we'll talk about throughout the show. First off, here's Liz Cheney.
Our concern and our opposition to what these women are saying, and many other members of the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives, has to do with the fact that they are advocating policies that will destroy this nation, and we will fight against it. And I think the news media, you included, ought to cover the substance. And I think it is outrageous for you to say the president doesn't talk about substance.
Let's now go to the president's advisor, Stephen Miller.
These four congresswomen detest America as it exists, as it is currently constructed. They want to tear down the structure of our country. They want it to be a socialist, open borders country. If you, as Donald Trump says, want to destroy America with open borders, you cannot say you love your country.
It's not that hard. It's not that hard to be on message.
Yep.
If you want to take Friday's show, there it is right there. Yep. It's not hard to be on message.
Right. It's handed to you every day.
Exactly.
Everything you need is right there. All the president, all his campaign has to do is point.
Yes.
On one side, you have a guy who wants to protect the country and is working to make the economy better. On the other side, well, just take a look.
Did you see Andrew McCarthy's piece in National Review that said the GOP really doesn't want Ilhan Omar to leave the country?
No.
She's the best example of what Democrats have become.
No,
she's the last person that they want to leave the country.
Well, it's
they don't want to send her back.
I don't want AOC. I don't want AOC. Frankly, I don't want AOC to lose next year. Please keep it going. She needs to be out there because they're doing all the heavy lifting for conservatives and, well, forget about getting to ideology. They're doing all the heavy lifting for common sense. You don't have to, you just look at an AOC and this is what you're probably going to see, I guess, in the next several years. We don't make predictions, but obviously the pendulum only goes so far. And they've just become ridiculous. Well, that doesn't play out without Omar and AOC and all of them being a big part of this and pointing out and demonstrating how ridiculous their thoughts are, their thought process is. So, no, I don't want any of them to go away.
So we have no problem with the administration as long as they message like that. You tie everything into specifics. That's what
yep.
you do.
And it's handed to you every day.
You do not leave any message with an opening, which is a vacuum that the left can fill in with any type of allegation or give them any chance to put you on the defensive. You go on the offense. That is the if you listen to Friday's show, that's what it was all about. That's what we want.
Yep.
Go on the offensive and hit the particulars and you win every single time.
Yep.
So good job.
Yep.
Even the president's tweets over the weekend. Fine. I had no problem.
Yeah, no problem.
All great.
No problem.
Stick to message.
Yep.
And stick to the substance of what the Democrat Party has actually become, what they are actually for, and you win every time. Also coming up here on the show today, Bernie Sanders on the minimum wage. Eric, I started thinking that. I started thinking that this could be the whole thing. That when he did this, we said this is going to come back and bite him in the butt.
Yeah, no, it's because be careful what you ask for. Now, Bernie Sanders is learning about the very dynamics of economics.
But this could be him. Remember all of the celebration.
Oh yeah,
this could be the end of his campaign. This could be the final nail in the coffin of his political career to become president, because he is going to be bombarded. If I'm somebody next week, if I'm a Democrat running, I have to go after Biden. And I also have to go after Bernie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Bernie. And in fact, Bernie, I might be easier right now. Biden obviously is the bigger target, but Bernie might be easier right now. You know what Bernie reminded me of over the weekend with the story of, you know, the whole having to limit the hours in order to facilitate $15 an hour. For those that don't know, the whole, you know, pay for his staff and unionizing and everything else. And then as soon as he unionized, and we said, look, they're not going to be happy. They're going to be complaining about pay. This is what unions do. They're going to fight for better pay, better working conditions, blah, 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 blah. Well, then over the weekend, it hit that he's going to have to basically limit hours in order to facilitate the $15 an hour. Well, of course he is. And we don't mind saying, told you. Well, it reminds me of the pizza guy. Remember the pizza guy that had the business, and he said, well, I'm going to pay my workers more.
Right.
Well, then he had to charge more for pizza. Well, then business started to slow down. He didn't care because he was doing the right thing. Oh, then he had to lay people off. Oh, wait a minute. Then he had to close.
Right. But he still did the right thing.
But he feels like at the end, with shutting the doors, you still did the right thing. Yes, I did the right thing. All your people are unemployed now, but it was the right thing.
And not only, and we'll get into more of this throughout the show, but not only has Bernie Sanders given the left a lesson on economics.
Mm-hmm.
But think about this. Now the people that are supposed to be working for him, mm-hmm, to promote him for president of the United States are out there promoting that he pays poverty wages, and they're the people that are out there to promote that you're the best choice as a Democrat to be president. You couldn't make this stuff up.
No. If a conservative movie maker wanted to go, the left would mock this movie to no end. I mean, this is because you know what? If I had seen the movie and it was playing out this way, I might think to myself, yeah, they're kind of making an extreme example. But it's exactly what we said it was going to be the moment he announced. The moment Bernie announced that he was going to unionize or allow his workers to unionize, we said, well, just wait for it. And you know, the other thing, too, is that you think about this. 2016, he has to give up his podium at his own rally to Black Lives Matter. I mean, you know, he started on the debate with Hillary. Nobody cares about your damn email. You know, so you gave up there. He rolled over when Black Lives Matter decided they wanted his microphone at his rally. And then, if that's not enough, and by gosh, don't you think it ought to be? You get to the 2019 preseason, very first set of debates, and who owns Bernie Sanders on stage? Eric Swalwell.
The one guy who's the first out.
The first guy to quit. Eric Swalwell's family didn't donate to Eric Swalwell.
Well, I know this didn't happen, but in my mind, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, here's Bernie Sanders, and here are his paid supporters.
Yeah.
And he goes to them and he says, I know how much you wanted to unionize, and I know how much the $15 an hour meant to you, and I am sorry that that we are limited in our funds, mm-hmm. and that I have worked you to the point that I've worked you overtime, but apparently you've been salary because that didn't make up the fact that that didn't bring you to $15 an hour. You were making less than $15 an hour.
Right.
So the only thing that I can do is cut your hours. Now go out and support me for president of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it brought me into another thing too. These are Bernie Sanders workers. Their only job is to advocate Bernie Sanders for president of the United States. Mm-hmm. That's their only job.
Yes.
They have no other job except Bernie is the best liberal and the best socialist to be president of the United States.
Right.
He pays poverty wages.
Yeah.
He doesn't
treat his workers fairly.
Well, didn't we say it? Didn't we say it?
Yeah.
Of course they had to unionize. We said it. That Bernie's out there promoting the fact that I'm unionizing my workers. We said, well, wait a minute. Of course you've got to unionize your workers. You're a socialist. Yeah. You're not going to treat your workers correct.
Right.
They have to have a union because a socialist doesn't treat the work. They always promote the worker, but
right.
they never treat the worker right, do
exactly.
they?
Exactly. Exactly. Give them their free bread and vodka, would you, Bernie, please?
Oh, just beautiful.
Yeah.
So I went, he's done. He's done.
No, it's over.
No,
it's over. Look, the energy's been over for quite some time. Again, the demonstrations, the key demonstrations where he just rolls over. You just roll over in a debate to Eric Swalwell. Get out. Frankly, just get out. I mean, that's just, it's pathetic on so many levels.
A little disclaimer here. Eric is talking as a liberal, not as a conservative.
No. I'm talking as a conservative.
Oh, okay. You are. Okay.
You're a horrible liberal. Get out. You think AOC would have rolled over in that debate? No. She took down the most powerful man in the world. The richest before the divorce man in the world.
So you would rather have arrogant liberal socialist instead of walk all over me.
Well, here's
liberal
the thing.
Socialist.
Here's what I'm okay with. Clueless, because that helps us. The promoting of the whacked out ideas that will never happen, because that totally works for us. But don't lay down. Man, I've had dogs all my life that won't roll over like that.
Oh, that's it gets underplayed because the left doesn't want to talk about it, the media doesn't want to talk about it, but that is one of the best presidential candidate stories of all time.
No, it really is.
When you think about it, it really is. You unionize, and then your own union of supporters, because they're just not workers.
Yeah. Right.
This is a completely different job. It's not like, okay, this guy hires me to make widgets,
mm-mm.
and I'm making widgets, but he is a taskmaster. No.
No.
You get hired only to advocate this for this person to be the liberal socialist candidate for president of the United States. And we're still in the preseason. We're not even close to being into the primary season yet. And his workers are revolting that he pays them poverty by the way, that's their word.
Their words.
Poverty wages.
Right.
And his response is, I'm going to cut your hours.
So here's it. Hollywood make primary colors too. Okay. This time it'll focus on Bernie, but it'll have to span like 2016 through 2019 preseason. He's not going to make it to 2020. I mean, he might, but he probably won't. I think he's probably going to roll over. He's going to have, I don't know what cash on hand he has, but he could have 20 or 30 million on hand. He might have even more left over from 2016. Who knows? He could have plenty of cash, but he's rolling over far too easily. I think he's about done certainly he's not going to gain any fire. There's nothing to gain there. So Hollywood, make primary colors too. Get his cousin Larry David to, because through DNA test or something, they found out that those two were actually cousins, and Larry David played him on SNL, so it works. So get Larry David to play him. Have Larry David write it, because it really kind of writes itself, and it's right along that kind of really defeatist type humor, and perfect for the movie. Write it, make it happen. Bernie, primary colors too.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Gerald Nadler on the Sunday morning news shows yesterday.
The report presents very substantial evidence that the president is guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors, and we have to let Mueller present those facts to the American people and then see where we go from there.
He has.
Yeah. Right.
Did something change? What specifically, I mean, he was out there shooting off his mouth yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, is this their last gasp? They know that everything else is coming down the pike, and they know that after this, it's over. It's done, so they're trying to put out some type of, last messaging, because he's saying there's high crimes and misdemeanors so we can impeach. They're not going to impeach.
No,
they're moving in the opposite direction. And as we said, what are the specifics of that?
Right.
Has the argument changed on obstruction of justice? Is there new evidence that Gerald Nadler knows about? We know it's in the Mueller report. Is there something that we don't know about? He didn't say that yesterday.
No.
He said it's clear specifically where.
Well, you know, and they keep using those words. Right after the report, they kept saying, well, the obstruction and the collusion, as if it were fact, as if the report itself stated that it were fact. But this is the MO. This is their approach to everything regarding the Mueller thing. Float the idea and make people believe something that's not true.
Also coming up here on the show, how the Democrats are now starting to use Obama's legacy against Biden. Now, this was an article in a liberal publication.
Right.
And then there was an article in a conservative publication saying Trump has not built one single mile of new wall.
Ouch. Headline at Drudge, by the way.
Yes.
And headline. So we don't know if it is, again, taunting by Matt. I mean, you know, there was a big movie headline over the weekend. You know, the new Avengers, or the latest Avengers, passed Avatar as the biggest box office take ever. So I don't know why that didn't make the headline.
Also, the situation with Ram. We'll tell you about the African-American Pastors Coalition that wants Nike to cut ties with Kaepernick. Video comes out showing that Nancy Pelosi advocated for the same kind of border enforcement that the GOP is now talking about. And here's a headline. Women who believe that men can't become women are like white supremacists. Mm. That more on the way.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
This hot air mass starting to subside for millions of folks as we get that cooler air out of typically where we do, the North, Canada. We'll see a place like Indianapolis, Indiana today to start your work week at 82 degrees. Yesterday, it was 92 in Indy, so we'll see that cooler air continue to subside southward. Now, the 5 to 7 day rain totals put the South, the Tennessee Valley, and the Mid-Atlantic into about the 3 inches of rainfall range. And that is primarily due to this clash of air masses. The cooler air out of the north and the warmer air from the south colliding. Again, we've seen this cooler air begin to dip first along I-80, then I-70. By tomorrow, we'll see the cooler temperatures migrate down toward I-40 east and west. It will remain mainly dry in the west. And there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
If they're not off the rails, they're off on a tangent. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
Well, actually, we're observing the left that's always off on a tangent. Yeah, so it may seem that we're off on a tangent, but they're always off on a tangent.
We're observing tangents. We're tangent observers is what we are. We're analysts for tangents.
I'm just thinking next week because I really believe that politically the impact of the whole Bernie Sanders union thing, this story has just been buried when you think about it just as a political story. You know, we've been talking about self-inflicted wounds. You want a self-inflicted wound?
Oh, yeah.
Think about this. Bernie Sanders next week. Well, I'm about taking care of all Americans. What are you talking about? Yeah, you're paying your own employees who support you poverty wages.
Right.
I can see every single one of the candidates that are at between 1 and 5 points hitting him on that.
Oh yeah. If they don't, they just need to quit. It's wide open.
I would repeat this over and over again to him if I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
How can you take care of America when you can't take care of your own employees?
Yeah. How are you going to manage a budget when how are you going to propose all these things? How are you going to pay for college when you can't pay for employees for a campaign?
Right. You can't even pay for your employees in your own campaign. They're in poverty. They're screaming for social justice. And you claim to be the leader of social justice?
Yeah.
I think the response, when the response came out from the campaign that we're going to cut hours, I'm thinking about, you're making every conservative point and every anti-socialist point that can possibly be made.
It's one thing to roll over. You know, it's one thing to roll over even to Eric Swalwell. But this is pretty much it. This is the proverbial nail in the proverbial coffin of the proverbial Bernie Sanders campaign. It's worse than a comedy. It really is worse than some kind of Hollywood movie version of it, because again, we would look at that if Hollywood had written this and said, "Yeah, you went too far. You really went too far." You're overdoing it. The last season of Homeland, and they did this thing where there was this conservative a guy that was on the internet, and you know, all of a sudden he made himself the martyr, the target of big government and the whole thing, and I thought, yeah, that's ridiculous behavior. You know, the guy came off as a cross between, I don't know, Alex Jones and any other conspiracy theorist, and you know, it was just over the top. And I thought to myself, yeah, there's Hollywood for you. If Hollywood had written this Bernie story of this, just this campaign season alone, I would have said, yeah, you guys are just crazy. I mean, yeah, he's not going to win, and he doesn't have the energy, and he is wrong, but this is just over the top. Had you written it about this in particular, especially the whole $15 an hour and unionizing and all of that, and where it then ended up this weekend. No. Go back and write it again and make it at least somewhat realistic.
Yeah, you'd be thinking to yourself, what conservative right-wing hater of socialism wrote this screenplay?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And so when the response came out that he was going to cut the hours, I said, he's toast. Every single Democrat will, because he still has, depending on the polls, he has between 11 and 18 points.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants that's what you're going after right now. If I'm in the second debate, I'm like, okay, can I hit Biden? Anything? Well, no, but if I'm the first,
right,
everybody's going to want to be the first. I believe, well, let me put it this way. if I'm running and if I'm a campaign person, now this is a stretch, if I'm a campaign person for one of the candidates that have 1-3% of the Democrat vote right now, I want to be the first.
Yeah.
I want that first question.
Right.
Because I'm going to turn it around and say, look, we've got a lot of people that claim that they're liberal. Bernie Sanders, for example, who claims to be, you know, the liberal with the reputation. Look at this. He pays his own people poverty wages. That ought to disqualify him right there. Now, Sanders will be furious, but you tell me that doesn't make a huge impact.
Yeah, no, I think that because you're basically escorting Sanders off the stage right there. I mean, okay.
How does he respond?
Well, remember in 2016 at the Republican convention, it was Ted Cruz being booed off the stage, the whole vote your conscience thing.
Bernie Sanders
being booed off stage next summer.
Well, think of all the liberal socialist arguments.
Right.
Here's a guy that has been in Congress for decades.
Yeah.
He owns 3 homes.
Yeah.
Recently bought a summer home. He is what you would consider in the top 1%, and he can't pay the people that are closest to him to advocate for him to be president of the United States. He can't pay them more than poverty wages.
He's a millionaire.
You can't win that.
Nope. You can't win it.
Wow. It's just beautiful. Yeah. I mean, it's just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, frankly, riding the coattails of the Occupy movement in 2016, that's really how he got to where he was. That was the energy behind Bernie in 2016. You know, because the remnants, the only thing left by that time of Occupy was, okay, we want our free college.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
that was the one thing that stuck out.
We're done camping out in Central Park. You know, and leaving garbage everywhere. We just want free college. We don't have anybody that speaks for us. We just have people that talk to the media. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And the remnants of that ridiculous movement was
free college.
Free college.
And billionaires, you know, you deserve free college because the billionaires are all evil.
Yeah.
And therefore the billionaires should pay for your college. I mean, it was the ultimate in, we have stated, you know, victim oppressor.
Right.
And he just made in general anybody who wants to go to college the victim, and the billionaires were the oppressors because apparently they did something wrong, so they owe you a college education.
Right.
And that really is all that came out of Occupy Wall. It's interesting. The only thing that came out of Occupy Wall Street. Think about that. It wasn't even on topic. At least, for God's sake, stay on topic. The only thing that came out of Occupy Wall Street was free college. How did you pull that one off? Right. Well, nothing really stuck.
Right. It's not. You guys didn't even go out to the Federal Trade Commission. Come on. Nothing from Wall Street? Really?
They even just collapsed on the banks, remember? We need to deal with small banks. And remember, we had the, was it the Portland Occupy Wall Street that called?
Right, Occupy Portland.
And we were talking to them and we said, do you understand that Dodd-Frank will actually make it so smaller banks will go away?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? And we explained it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Said it's already happening now,
right.
And they were dumbfounded. They didn't even know how to respond.
Right.
You know that the Democrats that you're supporting are actually putting in a policy that ensures that the big banks get bigger.
Right.
That it's harder for the small banks to compete.
Yeah.
They were dumbfounded by it. So even on that issue, maybe that was it. After that, they just said, "Well, if we're not even doing the bank thing right, well, let's just go to free college."
Well, what did they do? In fact, they said we couldn't find any small banks we wanted to do business with, so they put their money in one of the big banks. I think it was Wells Fargo.
I think it was, yes. They couldn't find.
We plan to find a small bank very soon, although these rates at Wells Fargo were really, really good and very attractive, so we decided to go with them. Plus, they have a drive-through that's 24 hours, and we can go to the ATM anytime we want and not get charged.
It was just ridiculous, and that's kind of what Bernie capitalized on, and it was the kids standing around. And it really wasn't the kids standing around that were part of Occupy even. They were the ones that had watched Occupy on Facebook. They weren't even the kids who were out in the park leaving all the trash behind. They were just going, "Hey, what do these people want? Oh, they want free everything and rich people to pay for it. Hey, that sounds good." And then they clicked the like button and then waited for Bernie to show up. And that's what happened. And then all of a sudden, woohoo!
When this happened over the weekend, I'm thinking to myself, "Wow." I just thought, even not that the conservative publications didn't bring it up, but to me, it is the biggest story so far in the primary because it was the biggest thing of self-destruction.
Right.
Yeah, and it will be used. If it's not used in the debate by any of the majority of the 20 candidates, then only have the let's put it this way, the 15 candidates that have three or less.
Yeah, right.
Then they don't want to win.
No, they don't.
Because that's gold. Because that's anywhere between 11 and 18 or 19 points, depending on the poll, that's up for absolute grabs, because that is the kind of thing that you cannot overcome as a liberal, as the first, if you wish to call it, the first socialist liberal.
Right.
That's how he's portrayed. He isn't, but I mean, right, the first socialist liberal of prominence, I guess I can say he is, in the Democrat Party.
Right.
Who got caught paying his, after unionizing and making a big to-do out of it, paying his people poverty wages.
Yeah.
I don't know how you overcome that.
Yeah, I don't think you do. Look, there was the momentum was declining. Well, the negative momentum was accelerating for Bernie.
Yes, it was.
To begin with. So basically, you just handed that negative momentum a huge, huge chunk of weight to take it downhill even faster. And that was self-inflicted, and it was destined to happen, and it wasn't hard to figure out. We nailed it from the beginning because it wasn't hard to figure out. We knew where it would go.
Remember, too, in 2016, we got quite a few Bernie Sanders supporters who called.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember the number of Bernie?
Yeah.
Number,
yeah.
We were surprised, right, at the number of Bernie Sanders supporters,
sure,
who called the show.
Especially when he started, right, winning states out west.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that became a thing, and it was the Bernie surge.
Not only will he be marginalized, but now the Democrats, now the young Democrats, starting to marginalize the Obama administration and what they actually did.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting article that was in the Daily Beast, which is a liberal publication,
right,
really in a very nice way, pounding on Obama and the things that he said. Oh, everybody loves him, but they don't like what he did.
I was just talking to somebody close to me over the weekend. We were talking and having a long conversation about how the liberals had abandoned Obama, and they were asking, and have been asking for a while, what did he do for us? Well, this whole thing in the Daily Beast is more of the same.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up here, the Mueller testimony later on this week. Gerald Nadler says, obviously, there's high crimes and misdemeanors, and we're just asking where. Please, if you could tell us where it is, please let us know. And, of course, there's always been a lack of specifics from Mr. Nadler. How the Democrats are using Obama's legacy against Biden, that he's been And by the way, one of those is immigration.
Right.
And they bring up immigration that even though the left loves the favorability, they love Obama, they just hate what he did.
Yes. Exactly.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
And now the whole thing of, you know, the liberals understand that the cages, where did they come from?
Mm.
Deportations, who is actually deporting more?
Right.
And it all goes back to Obama. Who? Oh, I gotta play. Who was it? Was it on the border? Oh, there was somebody at the colleges again. I got to find it. Interviewing the college students.
Okay.
Saying Trump said, you know, Trump said this. He goes, and afterwards, wow, that's this, that's this. Actually, it was Obama. Oh, really? Surprise.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks for being here. This from the Daily Beast.
Mm.
Daily Beast, by the way, a liberal publication. Democrats are starting to turn Obama's legacy against Biden.
Yeah, right.
Former
right.
Vice President Joe Biden has used Obama's beloved status among Democratic voters to insulate him from criticism from the massive field of candidates jockeying to be the next president. But in recent weeks, the Democratic frontrunner has had that legacy used against him, with his competitors pointing to the shortcomings of the last Democratic administration as evidence that Biden is not up to the task of leading the next one, said Kartnik Ganapathy, a progressive consultant now running a consulting firm. Barack Obama personally is incredibly popular among Democratic primary voters. And also at the same time, there's a growing recognition that income and wealth inequality got worse under his 8 years. The climate crisis got worse during his 8 years, and deportations went up during his time in office, and so on. By the way, the thing is, whenever they bring up the cages with Donald Trump and it's thrown right back at them, watch social media and everybody goes quiet at that point.
Yeah.
You know, Snopes in the last month came up with the thing, where did the cages come from? You know, did the cages come from the Obama administration? And, Snopes said yes.
Right.
And all of a sudden the left, at that, and I really wonder whether that might have been a turning point, because the left uses Snopes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the Obama legacy, this is now from the Daily Beast, would be anything other than a massive positive for Biden as he navigates a 2020 Democratic Party has been treated as indisputable within Democratic circles, and for good reason. A CNN poll taken in early 2018 found that Obama had a 97% favorable rating among Democrats. For a while, fellow Democrats running for the White House seemed content to simply avoid challenging the former vice president, as he repeatedly referenced his time in the Obama administration when touting his work on health care and beating back attacks over his record on race relations. But that hesitancy has softened in recent weeks. On issues stemming from immigration to health care to foreign policy, the 2020 candidates have been increasingly critical in their public assessments of the Obama administration. By the way, with no pushback either.
Right.
And they've used opportunities from the debate stage to candidate forums to try and turn Biden's ties to the former president from an overwhelming asset into something more complicated. Senator Bernie Sanders' campaign has used Obama's own words to challenge Biden's notion that Obamacare simply needs to be built upon. Senator Kamala Harris challenged Biden over the Obama administration's deportations policy. Senator Cory Booker backed off from the Obama administration's 2015 Iran nuclear deal as originally written. Mm. And Governor Jay Inslee has attacked Biden for being naive about dealing with Republicans and what has been interpreted as an implicit rebuke of the Obama's administration's own failure to grasp the GOP. The subtle targeting of Biden has come as Democratic activists and progressives have continued to grapple with the Obama legacy as well, in particular the Trump administration's family separation policies and inhumane conditions in detention facilities has sparked a broader controversy among Democratic voters about whether the Obama administration's own deportation policies laid the groundwork for the current controversies. Now, remember, this is from a liberal publication. So there you go. That's just part of it. That's not the entire thing, but it really is. And we said, you know, you and I have said this for a while now. Don't believe that Obama is necessarily going to be, you know, when we get down to it, you know, later on as now we're getting into the second debate, is necessarily going to be a positive. Those things, right, things that Obama did cannot be defended with the squad, with the Democratic squad leading the Democrats.
Well, I mean,
cannot be defended.
They can't. Just ask Pelosi, ask Feinstein, ask anybody on the left, because anyone out there right now that would be, I don't know, in power or have had great power in the past, like Obama. I mean, think about this. We're what? 2 years, 2.5 years since he was president. January 20th, 2017. Trump was sworn in. So we're looking at 2.5 years now. That's a blip by comparison in terms of how fast the luster was just gone.
Yeah, it was 15, 16 years for Clinton.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if not for the whole hashtag Me Too, some of Clinton's appeal would still be there.
Yeah.
Bill's, not Hillary's. Her appeal really happened.
You know, we had said this a long time ago. I mean, years ago, we had said this about Bill Clinton when it would come out that he was one of the most popular ex-presidents.
Right.
That people just loved him as president. People always referred back to it. And we went through all the policies, the major policies that he put into effect. And the vast majority of policies that he signed and promoted while president, he now regrets doing.
I signed it, but I wish I hadn't.
Yep. And we said, isn't that amazing that he is still adored by Democrats, even though he didn't do what they, even though he regrets doing it because of criticism that was coming as a Democrat, you know, through the Democrat Party throughout the years. Now, the whole thing is with Obama, it's been extremely accelerated, but you have to understand the adoration.
Yeah.
For Obama.
Oh.
Was
he hovered like a guy?
He hovered like a
you know,
Evan Thomas.
Yes, did exactly.
D-Day 2009, right?
Yeah, right.
He hovers like a a god.
Yes,
You know, he was Obama. The political idolatry for him compared to Clinton, you can't even make the comparison.
Oh yeah, Clinton. Wore sunshades and played a saxophone right. On Arsenio Hall. I was under the age of 80. Arsenio Hall was a late night comedian.
And Bill Clinton came out and played a saxophone very badly. And then said something like on MTV, I smoked it, but I didn't inhale.
Yeah.
Whatever it was about pot. And, you know, he became hip. Whoa. Obama did the entire hold my beer and walked out in full presentation with euphoria of a nation behind him. And it was like nothing anybody had ever seen politically.
Oh, well, in Denver with the Roman pillars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Think about this. I mean, it was just when you and that's why last week. And by the way, thanks. We got a few people that emailed us saying thank you for playing the Obama chant again.
Right. Yeah.
And we, you know,
it was a part of our 14th anniversary show last week.
Yeah, Obama. Yeah. Obama. Because the political idolatry, unmatched.
Right.
Unmatched based on the fact that there was no substance behind it. It was just.
Exactly.
It was a generality of hope and change. Well, when you elect somebody on a slogan,
mm-hmm.
and there's nothing to back it up, now they dropped him. They've dropped him so quickly. Now, they still say, oh, we love Obama. We just don't like what he did.
Right. I was traveling over the weekend. And I saw things that you're not going to, and it really was about, and somebody close to me was with me and said, I heard you say this on the show about the energy that's behind the Trump movement right now at the rallies. But it was interesting seeing flags, American flags, and right under it, Trump flags. And I mean on people's homes, and it was very, very interesting how they were promoting it. And I thought to myself, you know, well, first of all, that's great to see that kind of energy. But my question was, the person I was with was asking me, where's that energy with the Democrats? You don't see any of the banners or flags for any of the Democrats out right now. And I know it's early in the primary season, but do you fully expect to see a Biden banner, a Biden flag hanging with the American flag at any point?
But even at this time in 2015,
yeah,
you had loyal Bernie supporters. There was a passion for Bernie.
Sure.
There was still a passion for Hillary,
right.
Even though there was more of a passion. You could feel the excitement that Bernie was bringing in.
Yes.
Can I ask a question? Are we getting bored? Are even the Democrats, the rank and file, getting bored with socialism?
I think they're...
Is socialism losing its luster?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question.
Does it get to a point when you offer everything free, and free this and free that, and where finally people say, all right, stop BSing us?
Right. Yeah, quit trying, and the other part of it, quit trying to buy me.
Well, I mean, did Andrew Yang finally jump the political...
Gimme
shark when he said 24,000 for every household? And as we said, think about this. There's a presidential candidate that's actually come out and said $24,000 you get. We will redistribute wealth. $24,000 the average household will get. If you're husband and wife, you each get $12,000. Not a tax deduction. Not an exemption. You get $24,000.
Right. We're going to send you a check.
You get a check every year for 24. He's got a zero in the Democrat Party.
Nothing.
And so you have to ask yourself, does it finally wear on people? But it's interesting that now, and we'll have an example coming up here of liberals that are very surprised that what Obama was saying and what Obama did on illegal immigration, shocked by things that they consider absolutely white nationalist for Trump, and then they're told Obama did that.
Yeah, right.
That was Obama. And all of a sudden, oh, really?
Right.
Oh, that's why we have said over and over again, it's never been easier. That's why I'm very pleased with whether it was a Trump administration or Liz Cheney, the way that they came out strong this weekend and hit the specifics. the frustration that I think you heard from both of us on Friday, as we stated, with the Trump administration and the president himself, was based on our frustration with the politics of messaging correctly. When you see that you can win slam dunk, you know, one of the things I want to bring up later on is the whole racism thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we stated, because somebody brought that up to me over the weekend, I was in a conversation with a couple of people, and I said, they said, well, they keep calling him a racist, and I said, that he should have never got to that point.
Right.
Because the identity politics and the racism is on the other side.
Mm.
A plan should have been made to aggressively, as we've been, if you listen to the show for years, we've been such on the offense that the identity politics, which is you judge people by the color of their skin and their sexuality,
mm-hmm.
and their gender identity, and then you stereotype as to the way that they must think. It is the ultimate in the Democratic definition of racism. It's been going on for years. It's now getting to the point of creating a civil war within the party, and you should be, Republicans should be all over it because it's so easy. Republicans never have to deal with racism.
Right.
You can turn around and blast them every single day because by their own definition of racist, they are.
Yep.
By the Democrat and liberal definition of racism, they are. And I say that because is it traditional racism? No, it's the Democratic, because the original definition of racism is long out the window.
Oh, yeah. This is the new political definition.
Right, this is the new political definition. By their own definition, they're the racist. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Need operating cash to get you through a rough spot? Big Rig Lending can help. Mike Frabel of Big Rig Lending tells us how.
Everybody hears Big Rig Lending and thinks we do financing. That's really not what we do. We're small loans, $15,000 and under. We are really built around repair loans, working capital, insurance down payments. I have recently, over the last 6 months, 8 months, seen an increase of new owner-operators getting into the industry. And we have tailored a few products around to help them as far as setting themselves up financially with enough working capital to get off the ground and get running. Yeah. We have what's called our 10-4 promise. That means we're going to take 10 minutes with you. You're actually going to talk to a person, one of our funding specialists. They will get information about your business, your truck, and yourself. And then you'll send 4 pictures. From there, they can send it to underwriting within a few hours, have you a pre-approval amount. So we can help all credit types. Credit is not a disqualifier with us. We fund in as fast as 48 hours, where most other lenders are 7 to 10 days. One of the things that helps us with that is we do our own underwriting and we are our own bank. So when we put the whole package together, we're looking at how long have they been in the industry? What is the truck value worth? What are they looking for? What is the repair? We're finding out all the different details that you can't find out just by a credit score.
For more info, go to BigRigLending.com. This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Dale in Tennessee about Sanders' $15 an hour problem. Hi, Dale. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome.
Hi, Gary and Eric.
Hi.
Quite interesting what Bernie has done with his wage, but I thought my consideration on that is that if he's got a black mark on his minimum wage, then all his other issues that he's promoting, free health care, free tuition, not only affects him, but it should affect all the other Democratic candidates running on the same issues.
Yeah, I mean, for people who apply logic, it would. But unfortunately, on the left, it often just falls on the one person who fails. And you're right, Dale. I mean, it should. Yeah. It should really. Those who think about it would abandon those principles. But I think those folks would already be critical thinkers like yourself and would already apply that and have already discounted those individuals and their ideas that they promote. So, but thank you. I think it's a good point, though. You can follow any of the ideas that Bernie has promoted over the years and see it put into practice, this whole thing.
Well, he's
it just destroys it.
Well, we were talking about the politics of it.
Yes.
How the other candidates are going to pound him.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the reality of it. Now, they're not dealing with reality on the Democrat side.
Exactly. So. That's where the logic kicks in, and we'll have none of that.
You know, that's not just, allowed, right?
Yeah, how dare you? How dare you, Dale, bring logic to the left? But, great points, but that's for the critical thinkers, and they've already done their math on Bernie and everybody else on the left. Thank you, Dale.
Show that never stops. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yes, yeah, so the British Open was played and won by an Irishman.
All right. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Shane Lowry won. It was actually, I didn't watch any of it until Sunday morning. The golf. It was just. And then when I woke up Sunday morning, well, what happened was now that it's really warming up, you know, here, and it's in the upper 90s every day, which is like normal here.
Yeah.
I know New York City got some of the upper 90s, and you folks aren't used to it.
Right.
To me, the upper 90s, you know, it's humidity's down a little bit, so it's actually not bad. But it makes it so my pool is perfect to swim nights. And early mornings.
Right.
So did over 2 miles over the weekend. So really getting into it.
So Wednesday night, Thursday night, we're supposed to have overnight lows in the 60s, and that's kind of and 68.
Yes, but we have a cold front moving in. Only upper 80s.
Right.
it's
time to break out the jackets. I'm going to Albert Lea, Minnesota, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Shower Hotel, Super Rigs, come by and see me. And it's going to be a great, great event. But go to Rotella.com for more details. But we're going to be there, and I'm looking at the weather there, and we're looking at highs around on Thursday 79, on Friday 81. Saturday 84, overnight lows in the low to mid 60s. So yeah,
Texas October weather.
I know. I'm looking forward to fall type weather, drinking some hot chocolate at the at the truck stop,
singing Christmas carols.
Sure, building a fire.
Oh, wait a minute, you can do that. Christmas in July on Christmas. Hallmark's been on all. All month.
Yeah. And by the way, we'll be at the Trails Travel Center there in Albert Lea, Minnesota. Trails Travel Center, Albert Lea, Minnesota. And that's coming up Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Shell Rotella Super Rigs. Mm-hmm. And this will be, I am entering close to 20 years now as a judge there at Shell Rotella Super Rigs. So. Come on by and say hi, but it'll be nice weather. Maybe a chance of rain now. They're saying Friday morning, but doesn't matter. We want to see you there. But typically once every summer I will travel, whether it's on vacation or for business, and get a little free air conditioning. And apparently this year that's going to be in Minnesota. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I don't mind. It, as long as when it gets hotter here, the humidity goes down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I actually love it. I love the feeling. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, maybe some of our Phoenix, Tucson, and Death Valley listeners,
yeah,
can relate to this. I love the feeling of it being extremely hot, but not a lot of humidity.
Right. Yeah.
I love the feeling of going out.
Yeah.
On my pool deck after the sun goes down. And there's not a lot of humidity, but it's still in the upper 90s.
Right.
And you're sitting there, and your whole body is surrounded by heat.
Yeah, right.
Now, yeah. I wouldn't want it all the time.
Right.
But I like those experiences when I have it. And over the next month and a half is when you get it. Because you get higher temperatures and lower humidity. I absolutely love that. I never experienced that till I moved down here. You don't experience that up north.
Yeah, it takes till about mid-July usually where we start burning off the humidity. We don't get as much of the Gulf moisture.
Right.
And so the afternoons are a drier heat. And I grew up in it, and I love it. I used to love the cold weather as a youngster because being born in Omaha, you know, we would get snow, and I loved just going out into the snow. The older I get, it's all about the heat. I totally love the heat. So
I love autumn, and I love when temperatures are in the 50s and 60s. And I don't mind. I've golfed like three times in the last month, and it's been hot out.
Right,
and it's a beatdown. I love the first nine, and the back nine is like, oh, it's a beatdown. I actually like golfing better when it's in the 70s or 80s and doing stuff like riding the bike. And that's the other thing, too. When it starts getting hot, I'd rather swim than ride the bike or do anything else or play basketball because it just gets to be too hot. But so this is the swimming time of the year.
Right. Swimming season. Yeah.
This is swimming. And again, though, when I swim, though, you know, my mind starts working.
Yeah.
Remember, remember how many times I used to come on the show and say, wait, while swimming, because when I get up to, I only did 2 miles this whole weekend. I did 50 laps on Friday night, 50 on Saturday, 75 on Saturday night, then 110 laps on Sunday. Now, 151 laps of my pool is a mile. Mm-hmm. 302 laps is 2 miles.
Yeah,
I will eventually, in one setting, but I got to get up early in the morning because I can't do it. The sun would just burn my skin off if I tried it at noon or 2 o'clock, whatever. So I'm up at 6 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday mornings, and I'll swim. It'll take about 2 hours because swim about 1 mile an hour. You know, you don't go really quick.
You should just cover yourself in that lard like the swimmers that would. Remember the English Channel challenges that all the swimmers would, you know, cover themselves in.
In the lard.
Lard and grease. Nah. You should do that.
No, nah, I don't think so.
No?
No. Probably it's going to it would.
You could erupt into a ball of flames.
It would affect the chlorine balance of my pool.
Yeah, but you can fix that eventually.
Eventually, yes.
Well, then, I mean, because already you have salt water, then you add the grease. I mean, you're practically making a soup. You're on your way.
I'm swimming in soup. Well, that's a new band.
Man, what's that great smell coming from McNamara's
Forget
house?
About bowling for soup, swimming
yes,
in soup.
Swimming in soup. Yeah. No, I love the fall, too.
Fall I love.
Yeah. The changing of the colors, the changing of the NFL likelihood, you know, like the Bills are out of it, the Cowboys are usually getting close to being out of it. I mean, you know, and I do a lot of thinking in my exercising and jogging. Most of the thinking is left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. Just trying to keep my feet going in the right direction. But no, we're getting to that point in the year where, and I just started seeing it in stores the other day, you know, the Cowboys paraphernalia.
Back to school. And,
yeah, back to school. Oh, man, it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I walk in, and you're seeing it like at the end aisle displays and like the seasonal stuff, and it's all of the, you know, and I don't have kids in school. I mean, my grandkids, but I don't have kids in school anymore, so it doesn't hit me the way it used to. I mean, I used to really sweat it, but they would put it out. They put it out in like right after or maybe right at the beginning of July. They start putting out the school supply stuff, you know, and it's like, no, 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 no. And you see all the school uniforms and everything else. It's like, no, 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 no.
I've often talked about this. I'm, and I know you are too, I'm fascinated by business models.
Yeah, right, right.
And I'm fascinated to see what the ratings will be for the Hallmark Channel, because they have two different channels, but they've been playing, they have been playing Christmas movies since the last week of June. So it will be a good solid 5 weeks of Christmas movies that they have been playing.
Yeah.
What are the ratings like for the movies in July? It was about a week ago. I was sitting there and I said, let me just turn it on. I turned it on for about 5 minutes and I went, no, it doesn't fit.
No, it doesn't.
It just doesn't. It doesn't fit. It's 98 out. It just doesn't fit.
Well, it's
if it wasn't working, they wouldn't be doing it.
Because,
they're doing it, and I just, I'm fascinated by that business.
I'm guessing that July could be a wash for people sitting around watching Hallmark movies. I don't want to diss the Hallmark Channel, but I'm thinking, you know, with vacations and everything, right? People probably aren't spending a lot of time in front of the TV anyway. So what do? You just have, you know, a Christmas in July thing. And it's not like you're going to hurt the ratings. But people don't spend as much time in front of the TV in summer altogether and on any channel or network. So because of vacation and other things. So your viewing habits change. So there's probably no harm in bringing Christmas in July. Yeah, the business model is very interesting. It won't be long. I think sometime by the end of the week, we should start seeing Christmas stuff in stores. Okay. That's only halfway joking.
Nah, it'll be, I'll see it. Home Depot usually has it up by the beginning of October.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. I don't look for it much anymore. I don't. Because, you know, I could walk through. It could be July 30th, and I could see it, and I'd go, yeah, fine, okay.
I just, by the way, I just did a search for see if they had the ratings, and I couldn't find the ratings for, because I find we've often talked about it before. I find, you know, everything else, you know, for example, the one host on ESPN last week going crazy because we need to cover politics, we need to cover what Trump is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've talked about the business model for ESPN and sports that, hey, people don't like politics and sports.
Right. They don't want to see that.
Well, I don't want to see conservative politics in sports. I just want to watch sports.
Right.
I want to get away from it. Sports is about escape. And so the screaming again from the left, because the left does want to just bombard you with politics in every aspect. They don't want you to be able to get away from their message.
Right.
Because they're having a hard time selling it when they do, so they're trying to infiltrate any other thing. And so, you know, we've talked about ESPN's business model. We've talked about all the different business models out there. We've talked about Fox News and CNN and the loss of ratings and MSNBC. And then you think of all the different cable networks out there and how they're trying to get their niche. And I've always just been fascinated because we said this a couple of years ago when they expanded the, you know, the Christmas movies on Hallmark. And we went, wow, I wonder if they're going to start doing like Valentine's Day and then springtime movies and then summertime movies and then autumn movies, and they did all of that. And I just I'm fascinated to think all these people sitting in a boardroom saying, all right, how do we program this network to cover this type of movie where everything is feel good, there is nothing bad that happens, it's perfect town, flawed but ending up perfect situations for good people,
right?
You know, nothing really bad.
Right.
Everything a positive message. It has to be interesting to be in those boardrooms, especially in 2019, to see if someone says, but we need to bring politics into the Hallmark movies. They don't reflect real life. And they're just like, you're fired.
Yeah, right. Well, because I bet somebody's introduced the idea, but you can't. I think in August it's going to be interesting watching their back to school romance movies. That's, you know, where you have the small town guy who believes in back to school, the big city girl who does not, and eventually they get together. I was going to say hook up. They don't actually hook up on Hallmark, to be clear. It's very family friendly. They just, well, they develop a romance. We'll just leave it at that.
You can kiss. A kiss is okay.
Yes. In public. Not touching. Separate beds.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Eric Carley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Some great audio coming up following the top of the hour when students are asked, and you can tell they are liberal students, when they're asked to judge a Trump statement and then find out that it's an Obama statement. We'll have that coming up. Well, the Democrats now trying to hype up the Mueller testimony coming up later on this week. We'll get to some of the specifics of that. And there it is at the Drudge Report again. And you and I both asked the same question. Is he attempting to taunt the president? But there was an article in the Washington Examiner, which is a conservative publication, which lists the actual government report coming out last week that not one single mile of a new wall has been built.
Wow.
That everything is everything that's been built so far has been replacement for unsatisfactory boundaries, and that's sure to be taken on. I checked Ann Coulter's Twitter site; she had not yet tweeted on that.
I hope she's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. Anytime, anywhere, get our app. And thanks to all of our listeners around the world who listen on redeyeradioshow.com.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that.
But you can get our app and you can listen 24/7 here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool and it's really convenient.
It is. Stop messing around. Get the app, would you?
Yeah. Get the app today.
So many people have the app. You don't have the app. You see the pattern here? I think so. Look, that's a great way to get listeners to, you know, do things that you want them to do. Just berate them.
What's wrong with you,
moron?
People?
What is wrong with you? You don't have the app? Are you kidding me?
What are you, in 2017?
Oh, come on. Really? Really, guys? Yeah, no, we greatly appreciate those that listen on the app every day and listen to our podcast. Thank you. We love you very much.
Ready for some audio?
This
is just really, really good. It's self-explanatory. It's from Campus Reform. Right. They do a good job of looking at leftist politics on college campuses. And Cabot Phillips went out here recently and talked to students in Georgetown. And, you know, said, you know, this is a quote from Trump. What do you think about it? And it was actually from Obama.
Yeah, okay.
All right. right, and right. It's all on immigration.
All right, okay.
All right, so here it is from Campus Reform.
Today we're going to be asking students for their opinion on the policy of deporting people that are illegally here and have broken the law. We're going to be reading them a quote in support of that policy, but what they don't know is the quote is actually President Obama's from 2014. Will that change their opinion? Let's find out. Donald Trump announced this past week that he would be urging ICE and other administration authorities to seek out people living here illegally that have broken the law to deport them. So I have a quote for you here that's been making the rounds on social media about the deportation of criminal illegal aliens. We are a nation of laws. Undocumented workers broke our laws, and I believe they must be held accountable, especially those who may be dangerous. That's why over the past 6 years, deportations of criminals are up 80%, and we're going to keep focusing on threats to our security. What's your thought on that quote and that policy in general?
I think that policy comes from a place of like white American nationalism. Donald Trump has kind of like embraced this rhetoric of like racism and xenophobia that is not beneficial to our country at all.
I don't think that quote really stands true.
This administration has totally not done anything moral.
This is really awful.
Amnesty does not necessarily mean that we're losing border security. I think that Trump feels that way.
I think that's a bad decision because like the United States should be open to like immigrants. Like it's like they call it land of the free for a reason.
We just have to advocate for those kind of people and people like in Congress, like Ocasio-Cortez, who is helping people overcome these kinds of things.
Crimes do not nullify your humanity, and people are coming here in search of opportunity.
I'm going to show you the person that said that quote.
We're also a nation of laws. Undocumented workers.
Is that surprising?
Yeah, a little bit.
Why is that surprising?
Because I thought it was the Trump administration that said something like that.
Yeah, it's quite surprising. I thought it was from Trump.
I didn't expect it to be Obama either.
Why did you not expect it to be Obama?
Because...
not a mom who's working hard to provide for her.
I guess, I don't know, like, it never occurred to me that it could be Obama.
Is that surprising that it's a quote from President Obama?
Yeah, that was surprising for sure, yeah.
Do you think it's still a practice of white nationalism, though, to deport criminal illegal aliens?
I think the way Trump's doing it is.
Okay. President Obama, to this point in Trump's presidency, Obama actually deported more people, though. So it's, in practice, it was more from Obama, though.
What's your question?
What's your question? That reminds me of the and I don't want to, you know, that young person, I don't want to put her in the category of Rachel Dolezal. Remember Rachel Dolezal? I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. When someone asked her if she was a white girl. Yeah. The tables turn very quickly because everybody wants to be the activist and wants to be proud and, oh, yeah, well, no, that's just, yeah, then you hit them with the truth. I'm sorry, what was the question? Yeah, it's just...
Well, and that's why that story from the Daily Beast and came out and said, now they're starting to turn the tables. The 2020 Democratic candidates are starting to turn Obama's legacy against Biden. Because, look, the squad doesn't agree with Obama.
No, why would they agree with Biden?
Look, the squad... The leader of the squad has called Nancy Pelosi a racist. A member of the squad, in essence, called the Congressional Black Caucus, again, you know, what she said is, if you're going to be black, you need to, you know, talk like blacks. In essence, called them Uncle Toms.
Yeah.
Because they ended up supported Nancy Pelosi. Think about that. So they have no problem going after Obama.
By the way,
you and I talked about this, and I had this just thought over the week. I was thinking, and we've already had the thought, but I was just thinking in a different way. And I said, you know, people are thinking that because, you know, Trump got involved in everything and the disaster that was last week, the last 10 days, means that the Democrat Party has found unity. There's no reason for the squad to have any unity.
No.
As we've said before, and it goes back to what you said, when you practice the identity politics that the left has gone to, what you're seeing from the squad, not just from AOC, but from the squad in general, these are the people that are victims and oppressed by everybody.
Yep. Yep.
They're victims of everybody, including the Democrat Party. There's no reason why they're not going to throw Obama under the bus.
Right.
They're going to throw Obama under the bus because he's part, yes, we used to think that he was going to help the victims, but he actually was an oppressor too.
Yes.
They don't lose anything by stating that. That's the new and mindset coming from the Democrat Party that people have to understand, which is why we have said over and over again, part of the frustration is when Trump or Republicans are called racist, when you have the actual policy of identity politics, when it's so crystal clear. And by the way, as we always want to make sure we put in this little note, that when the Democrats use racism, number one, a lot of times it's because they just can't argue the point. But even when they talk racism, it isn't what traditional racism is. It's not the belief that you believe that you are superior to another race, which is technically it, and they've evolved it more into it's if you do have any policy that affects anybody who was a minority, which of course is ridiculous.
Right.
For example, if you wish to enforce immigration laws, if minorities are the ones that are immigrating, that it's absolutely racist at that point because you're targeting them, even if the activity is illegal, it doesn't matter.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you're enforcing current laws. It doesn't matter if you're doing exactly what the Democrats want, because Nancy Pelosi also got caught up in it. But by the definition of what a racist is to Democrats and to liberals, they practice it all the time. That's what has been frustrating for us, is throw it right back in their face. They're the ones that practice identity politics. They are the ones that over and over again judge your skin color and your sexuality and your gender identity and then stereotype you and say you must think this way, and if you don't think this way, then you're not authentic. What could be more racist by their definition than what they practice each and every day?
Right. Just, it's very apparent if you just open your eyes. But they get away with it over and over again.
Don't let him go away with it. Do what Stephen Miller did, and do what Liz Cheney did over the weekend.
Yep.
Throw it right back at them. Be on the offensive all the time. The allegations they throw at you, you throw it right back at them, and then give the substance of why they are, the particulars of why they are.
Yes.
Because if you do that, you win every single time, and the majority of Americans will look and say, "No, you got a better point."
Right. And that's the connection that I think the left is missing over and over again. They're doing their own damage. Help them along. It's not that hard. The campaign, the Republican Party, is being given a gift like never before. Remember going back, all of our 14 plus years together now, where we pointed out, well, you got an opportunity here, Republicans, walk through. You can walk through this door. It's wide open for you. Take the opportunity. And I think that it is probably bigger than it's ever been. And it is on core issues like border security.
Mm-hmm.
It is on core social issues like abortion, where the gift could not be greater.
Right.
And the task for the Republicans or anybody on the right could not be easier.
And I thought the administration, Liz Cheney, were great this weekend, attacking the squad on the substance of their ideas.
Yep.
And throwing it right back in the media's face. This is what we're attacking. That's how you win it each and every time. That they are the new leadership of the Democrat Party. And as they made clear this weekend, it's not that they're women. It's not that they're minorities. It's got nothing to do with, one is a naturalized U.S. citizen. It only has to do with one thing. Their ideas are anti-American, anti-constitutional. They dislike America. And I thought, by the way, I thought Stephen Miller was as close to hitting what we have said over and over again for the longest time, when he stated He said they are anti-American because they don't believe in the current setup of the way that America is set up today. They wish to change America. As we've said, they don't believe in the First Amendment. They don't believe in freedom of speech. They don't, I would go a little bit further. They don't believe in freedom of religion. They don't believe in the Second Amendment. They don't believe in our representative government, which is the Senate and the Electoral College. They don't agree with America's current setup. And he said, that's why we call them anti-American, because they disagree with what America is, which is what? Our basic laws.
Yep.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
And it really could not, again, I think, be simpler for the American people to understand when you put it that way.
Right.
Because, again, the far left is not going to, you're not looking to gain the far left. You're not looking to change the hearts and minds of the people on the far left. You're looking, and you're not clearly not looking to convince the people that are already following the president. You're looking to solidify the middle for what potentially could be a much greater victory for this president next year in his reelection bid than it was in 2016. And again, in my travels over the last month, the energy that I have seen on the streets matched exactly, and I know it's anecdotal, but I'm not seeing any of that on the left and seeing it at the rallies and everything else. You need to nail this coffin shut. You need to be done with it and then keep it up as if you're 20 points behind every day.
And I'll say it again, and we said this last week a number of times, which upset people when we said it, but it's extremely important. There is never a time, in my opinion, and I believe I speak for you also on this one, there is never a time between now and Election Day of next year that this administration and this party, if they think about what they say before they say it, and they plan out and they ensure that they cover all their bases, they should never be on the defensive once.
Right.
They don't need to ever be on the defensive. They can be on the, they can be from the offensive side of the ball all the time, because they have the, because on the substance of the ideas that they believe in, they have the majority of the American public against them, or excuse me, for, with them, and they're right.
Yes.
They can make the moral case to the American people that they're right. They should never be on the defensive, and this administration should never have to be on the defensive on racism with a party that practices identity politics like the Democratic Party does. Ever.
Right. It's way too easy.
If you want our whole shows from last week, that's what it is right there. Should never have to be on the defensive.
Right. Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, the latest on Iran, and, you know, you and I haven't had a discussion. We haven't. No, the two British ships were taken after we were on the air on Thursday night, Friday morning.
Right.
We haven't had a discussion on it. I saw a lot of people posting on it, especially conservatives, saying Trump has to do something. Actually, this is in the British. This is for the British to take the lead on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any reason for the U.S. to take the lead on their vessels being taken.
Well, I mean, we may be the majority of the military pushback if it happens, but it has to be led, you know, by the Brits have to take the lead on it because it's their ships, and NATO has to take a lead on it in general.
Well, I mean,
NATO exists, by the way, just for this reason.
Right. Well, because here's the thing. You go in and you retaliate, if you're the U.S. in this case, and then you all of a sudden you open the door to criticism from your allies. if something isn't handled right, if whatever retaliation you decide on isn't agreed upon or for some reason is criticized, then you did that when the Brits should have been leading this. This is their right now. This is their issue to handle. And then we'll see where it goes with the U.S. and their beef and their particular battle with Iran and the back and forth. But I tend to believe that that Iran is just, again, escalating to the furthest degree possible. The chaos there in the region to make sure that they can keep the oil prices high without going too far. And they're pushing their limits every single day, it seems.
Yeah, so I know that when you see this happening, because, look, the concern is out there. The concern is, how long do you allow Iran to do this?
Yeah.
And I guess the question will be, if it continues, what will be the ultimate, you know, response? The White House really pretty quiet about it over the weekend.
Right.
But then again, it was British tankers, British flag tankers, mm-hmm. That were taking. So in a way, you sit there, not that you're not communicating with them and not that there may not be possible plans out there. But right now, for the couple of days surrounding this, the British have to lead.
Here's your forecast.
This hot air mass starting to subside for millions of folks as we get that cooler air out of typically where we do, the North Canada. We'll see a place like Indianapolis, Indiana today to start your work week at 82 degrees. Yesterday, it was 92 in Indy, so we'll see that cooler air continue to subside southward. Now, the 5 to 7 day rain totals put the South, the Tennessee Valley, and the Mid-Atlantic into about the 3 inches of rainfall range. And that is primarily due to this clash of air masses. The cooler air out of the north and the warmer air from the south colliding. Again, we've seen this cooler air begin to dip first along I-80, then I-70. By tomorrow, we'll see the cooler temperatures migrate down toward I-40 east and west. It will remain mainly dry in the west. And there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
DPF is cleaned. Their DEF is in the SCR. Their ELDs are up to date, but their CDLs are expired. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So, you go to Drudge Report, and you see the headline splashed all across. Trump has not built a single mile of new border fence after 30 months in office.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a new single, not a single mile of new wall.
Right.
After 30 months in office. And look, before, I'll read you parts of the article and then we'll address it, because this is, obviously Drudge is doing this to taunt the president to get a reaction.
Sure.
I didn't see what the president tweeted on this yesterday.
I
did not.
I
see.
Followed some of the tweets. I have to go back. I can't recall whether he.
Right. I thought that would probably make news if he did. But the Ann Coulter faction of the Republican Party will take hold of this and say, "See, no new wall has been built." We'll get to that here in just a moment. It goes, the Trump administration has not installed a single mile of new wall in a previously fenceless part of the U.S.-Mexico border in the 30 months since President Trump assumed office, despite his campaign promise to construct a, quote, big, beautiful wall, end of quote. This comes from the Washington Examiner, a conservative publication. In a statement last week, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the federal agency overseeing border barrier construction, confirmed that all fencing completed since Trump took office is in place of dilapidated designs, end of quote, because the existing fence was in need of replacement. The agency said that it had built 51 miles of steel bollard fence with funding that was set aside during fiscal 2017 and fiscal 2018. But while the funding was meant to both replace outdated walls and to place barriers where previously there had been none. The government has only completed the replacement projects. The projects to secure area with no fencing are still in the works. The 50 miles of completed replacement border is a 10-mile gain since early April in Trump's 2.5 years in office. His administration has installed an average of 1.7 miles of barrier per month, and none of it is in areas that did not previously have some sort of barrier. A total of 205 miles of new and replacement barrier has been funded in the last 2.5 years. Now, the reason is just as you had said. A senior official told the Washington Examiner that Border Patrol and the Army Corps of Engineers move faster on the replacement projects than the new ones because the approval process for environmental and zoning permits, and also if you have to do
eminent domain,
mm-hmm. was far less extensive than in areas of the border with no barrier.
Right.
That's a big duh.
Right, right.
A second senior official defended the progress of the administration and blamed Democrats in Congress for blocking funding for additional projects that the White House has tried to move on. And they say despite the lack of barriers, new barriers, Trump has applauded his administration for building more border walls. His 2020 campaign has made the border wall its primary message.
Right.
The 2020 campaign debuted the slogan, "Finish the Wall," at his first rally in 2019 in El Paso. At one point in his speech, the crowd began cheering, "Build the wall." Trump responded, "You really mean finish the wall, because we built a lot of it," though he did not share numbers with the thousands of people in attendance. And we had said at that point, be honest with the people.
Well, and you don't, because here's the thing. The only thing the president ever had to say is we need to secure our borders. That's it. Because no one else was saying it on the left or the right at the time in 2016. And still today, he's the one, I think, that takes the lead on that issue. You don't have to go in and make any other promises, because the only thing you could say is we'll let the Border Patrol, all of those that are in charge of their different sectors, will have them make their decisions on what they need in their sector. My friend Raul Ortiz, the Del Rio border sector chief, had his last Thursday, his State of the Border address, and talked about the apprehensions in the Del Rio sector and how many, coming from all different, 50 different nations. And it was, of course, I follow any news that Raul is involved in, but it's not just because I know him. It's because of the problem on the border, and we need to be hearing from the Border Patrol. And that's where I think the president needs to let them take the lead and just say, I will listen to the agents. Now, here's the frustrating part. He said that actually during the 2016 campaign season. He said, "I'm going to have an open door with him." And I think he has, to a large extent. I would have to ask those sector chiefs like Raul and others, if that's been the case, if from their perspective he has done a good job at doing that. But really, politically, is what we're talking about, what you need to promise the American people,
right,
as commander in chief, and that is we're going to work. I'm going to work every day endlessly until as long as I'm president to secure our borders, to have greater border security, to protect the American people and destroy.
Again, your political enemy in this is not the Democrats, because the Democrats can't say anything. You can attack them.
Right.
The only political enemy the president has here is with the Ann Coulter faction of the Republican Party, who will take him to task, saying he's been telling his people he's been building new wall and it's just been replacement wall. There it is. There are the facts. Not one new, and we had stated, number one, that he didn't need to make the promise that he made when he was running for office. He didn't need to say a wall and the Mexicans are going to pay for it. Now Mexicans are going to pay for it that's completely off the table. Nobody even brings that up anymore. But we said that's not going to happen back then. And it's going to be very tough for him to build a wall with the Democrat Party. And the fact is, even if you could do it, you're not going to build 2,000 miles worth of wall, because there are sections that just a wall isn't the best thing to put in that particular place. And eminent domain is going to be an impossibility to get all of that done in his time. But, as we have said, there is no better person. There is nobody in the United States, in any political party, that still has as much credibility or believability that they are concerned with border security than Donald Trump. Doesn't exist. And the fight here, if it becomes a fight with, you know, this week with the Ann Coulter faction, it won't become a fight with the Democrats. Because right. the Democrats, because see, Trump's not building the wall. It's not probably going to happen. Oh, what was it? What's her name from Arizona? Sinema. Did you see where
yeah,
she?
Right. Kristen Sinema, yeah.
We might be able to say there is one Democrat who isn't for open borders.
Yeah, great point.
I wanted to say
yeah.
because,
okay, there
because,
you go.
Because
yeah,
she,
yes,
she's, I saw she, that. She's ready to work on asylum
right.
for people that truly don't have an asylum issue, which, again, has to blacklist her from any liberal Democrat party or any support in any upcoming election that she has in the future when she said that. But you can see that the pressure for her in Arizona is even there.
Yeah.
And so he can still win the debate. First, you have to convince the American people that you're right on the issues. And before you can get movement in the laws and the change in the Democrat Party because of the squad that leads them
right.
is open borders.
Right.
And so there is no better person to fight that battle than Donald Trump. It doesn't exist.
Right. Yeah.
And so when I see the headlines splashed all across, as we said, look, again, of course that new wall wasn't going to be built immediately because it was going to take a while to get zoning, to do eminent domain, to do all of this stuff. And in all likelihood, what you're looking for is to set the country in more of a, you know, correct direction from this point on, and hopefully some long-term planning. Just understanding that the power of the presidency or the limit of the power of the presidency in this particular situation. But there is no better person to be promoting what should be done than Trump.
Right.
Who else? You know anybody else?
No.
I don't know anybody else. So, no. You know, he's the guy for this. Did he oversell parts of it? Yeah. Politicians oversell.
Sure.
But it's, if you oversell what you can do, but you're still pushing in the same direction, that's what matters. And I think most people, including independents, know that and are more likely to say, on the border, it's Trump.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, the Ann Coulter faction, I did check her Twitter. She really wasn't on this story. Didn't really tweet about this yesterday because this story came out from the Washington Examiner early Sunday morning. They updated it in the afternoon, and she didn't tweet on it at all. So I just checked her Twitter site. So,
yeah.
You know, she has the ability to rally that side of it, and she's really big that Trump's done nothing and he's no better than Democrats. I would respectfully disagree with her on that wholeheartedly,
right. Yeah.
That there is no better person to push it.
I think the president did tweet something yesterday, Sunday morning, early, that appears to be related, and I'll quote, it's quote, "Make America Great Again" in all caps with an exclamation point. So I think that could be related to the border, possibly the economy, possibly winning the election next year. I'm not sure. We'll look further into it. It's funny because every once in a while he'll just tweet, "Make America Great Again." And I don't see anything in response to the story from the Washington Examiner, and which is the headline right now at Drudge. Oh, wait, here's something. Drudge is a has-been. Sad. No, he's not.
No, but then no. I thought that might have been legit when you said that. Trump is a has-been.
No.
Sad.
Yeah, no,
it was the sad that got me.
Okay, so if he tweets that in an hour, we know he's listening.
Right.
No, there's nothing nothing on there just yet. Yet. So, but I think there, again, is this opportunity for the president to, again, if you're going to relaunch this effort, which you are, you're not going to get the wall before at the very least before January of 2021, because the House isn't going to, the current makeup of the House is not going to give it to you. House leadership will not give you a dime for the wall. But this is your push. And again, it's exactly why you're pushing for not just your house, the White House, but the House of Representatives to be taken by Republicans. And you want to campaign with those and promote those
right.
who can take the House back and also support you in this effort, not just on the wall, but just in your agenda altogether. So that's what you need to do. This isn't just about getting the White House. It's about keeping the Senate and winning the House.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Dan in Toledo, Ohio. Dan, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Yeah, good morning, guys. You keep saying that the Democrats in the House are holding this up. The Republicans had all three. They had the Senate, they had the House, they had the White House. They didn't get it done in 2 years. It should have been done before midterms. That way they could have voted any Republican out that didn't vote for it. They dropped the ball, Trump and the party. Trump is doing this all for political reasons to have something to run on the next election in case the economy slips.
Well, it's all political. It's all being used, but he does take the chance. If you're saying that he never had any intention of building the wall, and he's
straight.
Okay, all right. Well,
they didn't do it the first 2 years.
No. We're saying we're going from this point on.
Right.
We're talking about right now. There's no chance of him getting anything because of it. Remember, in the first term, he did get $317 million for replacement walls. We said and additional walls. He did get. He didn't get 2,000 miles of it, but he got now, how many he got, whether it's 20 or 30 or whatever the eventual amount would be. But we were going from currently what he's dealing with till now. We said it back in the first 2 years that if he was the one pushing for the wall, he should have been pushing for it harder in the budget bills, and he did not.
Right.
But now we're talking, and again, that happens in early presidencies where they don't want to be. They don't want to have too much of an animus relationship between themselves and their own party at that particular point. So he got what he could get, but you had people like Ann Coulter that were furious at him. They thought he should have been pushing with his own party a lot harder, and that was a legit criticism of his.
Sure.
But yep. We're talking about what's going on right now, the past that we can do nothing about. It's what he has to work with right now and where he can go. But we understand what you're saying.
Sure.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.